Hi, this is Paul Siegel, and you're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about splitting the party. When is that a clever strategy? But when is it a recipe for disaster? And what can you as the DM do when a group goes their separate ways? All that and more today on Wandering DMs.
Before we get into it, Dan, I will remind everyone that, as always, at the end of the show, we'll be hosting our after-party chat. That is a private video chat hosted by Dan and I, and open to all of our patrons. And you can join in by becoming a patron. Just visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. Sign up at any tier, and you'll get an invite to our private Discord server. Just get that all set up during the course of the show, and at the end of the show, maybe a little bit after, around maybe 10 after 2 p.m. Eastern, we will be hosting our after-party chat on our Discord server.
Definitely. Don't everybody just go your separate ways at the end of the episode. We want you to get back together on our Discord and continue the conversation to all join as one again. We'll look forward to that.
Dan, splitting the party. I was like, I'm hoping that this isn't like you and I going our separate ways.
Well, Paul, I actually think we probably will be going in separate directions, because this is one of those topics that I actually, historically, we have had very distinct viewpoints about, that I've been very surprised, because obviously I'm right. And when you came at it from a different direction, I was like, wow, an interesting take, Paul.
Excellent. Excellent.
Anyway, Happy New Year, Paul, and everybody else. I'm glad we can get back together.
I mean, it's kind of a classic thing, right? There's a lot of tropes out there around don't split the party, right? I feel like I've seen, silly, videos and songs and whatnot about just don't split the party. Don't do it. It's terrible. Never do it.
You know, that matches my historical experience. When I was much younger playing D&D, the first couple of years for me, that would happen naturally. Particularly my players at the time were a little bit more competitive with each other. And so we had a lot of cases of like inter-party backstabbing or thieves trying to steal from people. And I would get in these situations of someone says, I want to sneak off and, rob our own camp or into a room so no one else can get the treasure. And I would get in situations where I felt just naturally compelled to do these sidebars or take a player out of the room for a while, or I'd have players passing notes to hide what they were doing. And then that, kind of like a poker game, that would the note signaling or the sidebar itself would communicate to people, well, now you need to hunt or search or try to protect yourself. And then I had more notes coming in. And then I started to have bluff notes coming in that were fake, of like, this is a fake note just to confuse player A, that think that I'm doing something when I'm not. And the whole engagement started to turn into this rigmarole. And it was, people were being, left without anything to do. And there was a lot of confusion and kind of backstabbing and distrust. And so I heard that advice of don't split the party, and I was like, boy, I am convinced. I will never allow that again.
I mean, certainly from the DM's perspective, it is a logistical problem, right? Because you're just one person. You only have one set of ears. You only have one voice. So when the party splits up and half the group is doing one thing and half the group is doing another, you can't do those simultaneously, right? You just can't. So that means inevitably doing something where, half the group is disengaged, right? It's just not involved in the play of what's happening, which is a bummer for the DM, I think. So I could see the argument there for the DM to discourage splitting the party. But from the player's perspective, why not? Why, like, what's so terrible from the player's vantage point of splitting up? Divide and conquer.
Well, that's an interesting point. So actually, Josh in our chat just pointed out the strategic problem to the players of splitting the party invites defeat in detail. And of course, you can. It's very easy to say, "United we stand, and divided we fall." One of the main principles in a war game is if you can split up, if you can catch your opponent in little pieces, it's a lot easier to focus your forces and take them. But the number one thing you want to do is break the enemy's line, and then you can take them out half and half is a lot easier. So just on the face of it, it seems like a strategic misstep, usually in a war gamey type role-playing game for the players to split up. And if you're watching a horror movie, I mean, inevitably someone's going to say, oh, well, we can search more quickly if we all split up. And you know that is, you know, a narrative trope specifically to make them all more vulnerable. So it wouldn't seem like a great idea.
It happens in every single episode of Scooby-Doo, right? Hey, gang, let's split up.
Yes, right. Right. Right.
Jackie and Scooby will go this direction and get into terrible trouble.
Right.
Fred and Velma and Daphne will go that direction. And who knows what those two get into.
Totally.
Anyway.
Totally. Followed by chasing.
Yeah. So that is an excellent point. I want to circle back to it I want to step back for a second and talk about the use case I see for splitting the party. That I feel like the reason it comes up most frequently for me when I'm running D&D, you know, or any like adventure RPG, which is another point I'll come back to, because you mentioned horror, and that's a whole different ball of wax in my opinion. But in D&D, I feel like I can remember a time maybe when the players were a little more competitive and maybe there was some note passing or whatnot going on. But I would say more often what happens is someone gets the bright idea that we should send a scout forward, right? This is like the classic setup I see for splitting the party is somebody, one or two or some subset of the group, is much more sneaky than the other subset. And we say, great, we're going to send our sneaky thief, who is maybe invisible or maybe silenced or maybe both, down the passageway to scout out what's going on and then come back to us and report. And this is when Dan, when you and I were first playing together in D&D, this was the exact scenario that I would set up and thought, like, this is cardinal reason number one, why not to split the party? Because inevitably the scout would go too far, right? My argument was that every scout that I had ever played with was a terrible scout. That they would go forward, they would observe, and if they saw no danger, they would keep going forward. And they would keep doing that until they got themselves into trouble, right? And that's the ultimate, like, don't split the party reasoning, right? Is that, okay, now your scout, who is probably not the strongest member of the party, is alone and confronting danger, has no support, no communication back to the main group, and it's just a bloodbath. And it's it does not go well for that scout.
It's interesting, you know, I was just reading a section, you know, the first edition Player's Handbook has this really, to me, fascinating section right at the end about, like, what counts as good play. And there's a lot of emphasis in those first edition rules about promoting and rewarding skilled play, strategic play at the game. And there's a section specifically of set a goal, like the number one, set an objective. Converse with the players, set a goal, and don't get distracted. And there's a paragraph there of, like, the DM's going to have all kinds of interesting, fascinating things that are there. They're going to try to distract you from your mission. Don't let the DM distract you with all the interesting things in the dungeon. Avoid those. And I think it's interesting that the player type who most quickly wants to take the thief character tends to be an easily distractible player. And so as they start to get some inertia, some momentum, right, they want to keep playing. They want to keep, you know, playing and interacting with the world. And they tend not to be the first, like the paladin player might be thinking about what's the experience for the other players. And the thief player tends to, like, not have that meta awareness a little bit, just a little bit.
I love that you're bringing this into just like the psychology of the players themselves. you know, here's the problem, right? And here's the problem with the setup of that scouting scenario is that I believe that old school D&D especially is chiefly about exploration, right? And so that means a lot of the game is the DM describing, here's what you see, here's what's going on in the environment, and then the player reacting to that and deciding, okay, you know, what do I want to interact with, or do I move on, or where do I look, et cetera, et cetera. When you send a scout forward, you limit who gets to play that game to just the scout, right? I mean, this is the meat of the game, in my opinion, and you've excluded a good chunk of the players from playing this game. And so does that always bother?
That's a great point.
Now, this is solvable, right? This is solvable through training, right? If we sit down with our thief player and we have a real heart-to-heart and say, look, very important, that when you go forward, if you see anything, I don't care if it's dangerous or not, when you see anything of interest whatsoever, you turn around, you come back and report. That's your job. Observe and report. Does that fix it?
You know, we have to train the thief players, and we've done, you know, just to be clear, viewers, we've done that. This is not completely theoretical. No, we've actually sat down. We've actually had those conversations multiple times. You know, Josh in the chat points out maybe the right thing to do is scouting with NPCs. And it's an interesting point because initially the thief class, which was an add-on to D&D, was actually intended to be, my understanding, an NPC-only class, right? Is the actual players kind of shouldn't want the thief character because they're so weak. So if you're literally playing original D&D 1974 with no thief class, you know, maybe that's an option. Maybe make it an NPC and don't let an actual human player fall down that pit. Our games have improved a bit with those conversations, Paul.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they have. Now, I think like if you go back to our favorite thing to reference, right? The great birthday game of whenever the heck that was our first attempt at live streaming a game. I believe you did a fair amount of this, right? And I want to think that it was always Max who was sent forward to scout. Maybe he was visible or something, and he would get pushed forward to scout, and then maybe, you know, sometimes you can solve some of these issues with magic, right? If you have a spell that allows you to silently communicate with your scout, great, now you have a line of communication, that's better. I'm trying to remember that game because I don't think you did have communication with him, but I think it was just maybe just meta discussion at the table where Max kept saying like, maybe I should turn back, and everybody like being like, no, push forward, check out more.
that's a good recollection.
You
know, maybe that's one of those things where you need to just abstract it a little bit more. I mean, as the DM, you could take control of that. It's a really good point, Paul, about just taking the exploration away from most of the other players. So maybe that's one you could abstract a little bit and just say, I know that this is the party's policy, and so I'm going to tell you what a room looks like and just assume that the thief is there and then going back and communicating it, so you're not dwelling on the detail of the one thief so much. Maybe that's one you should kind of take a similar to, you know, originally treasure splitting was in the books, was supposed to be this entirely on the players, and you're supposed to have a debate and roll dice and take priority and who, like, picking your team stuff. And nowadays I think a lot of DMs more, you know, take control of, like, we're going to split this up evenly, and then I can just tell the players how much money you get. So maybe this is another place where we should kind of take that off the player's plate, because we know that it can get you in a lot of trouble.
I worry about too much abstraction there, because again, I'm going to go back to that, my recollection of that game is that I think that Max was also maybe flying or spider climbing across the ceiling or something, right, to give himself extra sneakiness, protection, whatnot. So, of course, missed the traps on the ground that he was climbing right over, just didn't see them,
right,
came back, and
right,
of course, right, sure enough, the party walks right into them, right? You know, so, I mean, I don't know, because, you know, when you get into the exploration part, especially you're talking about a classic dungeon crawl, you're in the exploration part, I think that, you know, some of the joy of that, or one of the interesting tactics of that for the players is, how do we get more information than we would have otherwise, right? Can we send a scout? Does the wizard have a wizard eye spell, right? Can we use a clairvoyance scroll to see what's in the next room? Anything that gives you a little bit of an edge of like, okay, we have some information, more than zero, right? I think that helps the players and is interesting. So I don't want to like take that away, right? Yeah. I want to take that away from the players of like, oh, we came up with a clever way to get a little more information about what's ahead. But we saw this just recently, you know, again, wow, all my examples go back to my birthday. That's funny. Just recently, my most recent birthday, when we were playing a D&D game around the table, we had one player who was just like, just took it on himself, right? He was like, I'm going to go run down the, I'm invisible and run down the tunnel and see what I see. Right. And quickly got himself separated from the rest of the party and quickly got himself into trouble. And then sure enough, you know, juggling back and forth with the two groups as they encounter problems.
Can I go on a little bit of a tangent? Yeah. I'm going to go on a tiny little bit of a tangent on the legitimate value of having more information. And I agree that the party, the players getting more information about their location. I learn all the time that the game gets better the more information they have, the more things that they have to legitimately make choices about. And there's a really funny thing happening in my current Star Frontiers campaign is that the adventure modules are written that the opponents, who are predominantly like space pirates, continually say they will never tell the players anything ever. You capture them, you knock them out, you interrogate them. They won't tell you where they're from or what their goals are. They won't tell them nothing. But in the core rule book, there just happens to be, in your standard medical kit, there just happens to be a truth serum drug that works all the time, 100% efficacy, and the players have a bunch of this truth serum. So every they knock out one of the pirates every time, every place they go, and then just pump them full of truth serum, and then they, like a charm spell, basically, and they just start blabbing everything they ever knew about, right? And so I'm wild. There's this interesting little glitch whereby I'm wildly violating what the adventure was written at, and once again, I'm stumbling into the players so much better. The player is so much more interesting with the party having stuff to converse about and connect things and making extrapolations and make decisions about. And it's one of those really wonderful accidents where the more information they have, the game always gets better in my experience.
I totally agree, right? Like, I mean, I think you see this in just like my favorite use of the charm spell, right? Like I use the charm person spell in the middle of a combat to make somebody switch sides. I guess that's interesting, but it's so much more fun when you have, you know, beaten the enemy and you have a captive and you use the charm spell just to say like, well, let's guarantee that we get the truth out of them, right? Let's, you know, let's pump this one person for information and use magic to it so that we can assure ourselves that information is as accurate as possible, right? Just take exactly. them lying off the table. And it's delightful. It's delightful. I love it. And it's a great player tactic. And it's super fun, I think, to just, you know, have, you know, an NPC be like, all right. And it's a fun exercise for me as DM to think, okay, now I got to put myself in the brain of this NPC and say, well, what do they know? Right? What's their perspective of what's going on in this dungeon? And let me feed that to the players.
Totally. Interaction-wise, it's more interesting. Strategy-wise, it's more interesting.
Yeah.
So you want to support that, right? You want to reward and embrace the pursuit for more information, with a thief.
Yep. I agree. And again, we're focusing pretty heavily on this whole like sending the thief forward to scout thing. I think maybe just because it's easier to discuss in this kind of setting. There's plenty of other cases where the party will come up with some reason why like it makes sense for like half of us should go this way and half of us should go that way, either because we're doing some kind of pincher maneuver or I don't know. It was something. Yeah. It's usually something to do with the actual layout of the dungeon we're in, right? It will be advantageous to us if we can have operators on two different places, two different locations for whatever reason.
Let me pitch a kind of a degenerate base case that we know about, and then we should probably talk about like how does the DM actually handle this to make this a good experience. Our good friend Max was running some brand new players through the classic Keep on the Borderlands module B2. They'd never run a role-playing game before. They'd never played D&D before. And they're wandering around the outside wilderness. And they run into the place where there is a swamp with a cave with a lizard man lair. And what happens here is the party has a disagreement. They just have a disagreement. Should we go into the lizard man cave or should we not? And the party just can't come to an agreement and just splits down the middle. Half of them say, yes, we want to go in. Now, these happen to be the wizards. And the other half with the fighters and clerics say, no, we don't want to do that. That seems like a bad idea. So the half of the party, the weaker half of the party goes, yep, we're doing that. They go into the cave. I guess maybe they think that they're going to open negotiations, I guess. The lizard men are incorrigible cannibals, or at least human eaters. And so at max as DM, the natural solution was just kill them. Just kill them. Just kill them all. And so the lizard men wiped out the wizards and they came out and they wiped out the rest of the party having been split up. And he had a TPK there in the first session. Bam.
Yep.
Now
yep.
That turned out to be an important learning opportunity for that party, right? They never split the party again. That was like, oh, I didn't know you could die. I didn't know you could die in D&D. That didn't seem like a thing that had been advertised for role-playing games for me, right? So now, A, lessons, we can die. Lesson B is, don't split the party in situations like that. Come up with a friggin' plan. So that might be enough. Just kill them all. Just kill them all, Paul. There's your response to splitting the party.
I do want to say, I do want to say that ultimately, you know, I want to talk a little bit about from the DM's perspective splitting the party, because this is where we get into the controversial part. For me as DM, I very much enjoy when the party splits. I want to see it all the time. It's fun for me. And I would say especially in horror games, it is choice to get the party to split up. And I think everyone enjoys it in those moments. In D&D, in an adventure game, I think I would still enjoy it as DM. But it is a moment where in the sort of, you know, in some aspect of the game, there's a little bit of competition happening between the players and the DM. And like you sort of mentioned, right, if they're using truth serum or charm spells or whatever to get more information out of the DM, even though in our DM brain, in our one part of our DM brain, we're going, this is good. I'm giving them more information. The play is better. There's another part of the DM brain that's going, damn it, they got me. Right. You win this time, players. So you know, there's a little bit of like, oh, the party split, I got him, right? Excellent. Suckers.
Nice.
So there's it's a tactical mistake that I as their adversary enjoy exploiting. From a storytelling perspective, from a gameplay flow problem, right? Like, this is the problem that I find most enjoyable to solve, right? Is simply that what I was talking about before, of like, once the party splits, you know, half of the group has taken the attention, right? Their actions are being, being run by the DM, they're interacting with the DM, they're playing the game, and the other half of the party is disengaged. And I would say that the best approach to that is you have to assume that the half of the group who is not active is the audience. And so if you think of it that way, right, you've got, you know, I as DM and director, the characters who are involved in the action are the actors of the movie we are creating together, and the other half of the players are the audience, right? I feel like I can much better visualize how to deal with that. And for me, the answer is rapid cutting, right? Rapidly cut back and forth between the two groups. Play a little bit with one group, get them to a point of attention, or a point of tension, rather, right? Something interesting is happening. Oh, you open the door, you see some light starting to leak through, you hear some strange noise. Meanwhile, back upstairs, right? And if you just cut that tension again and again by flipping to the other group, it is super fun and engaging, I think.
I got to ask, Paul, so the first time that I was in a game with you and you did that, I was really amazed. So I was amazed that you were letting the party split up. This was your you know, the game that's actually titled D&D that was being run by whatever the precursor to Fearful Ends was. And I was amazed that you were, so it wasn't necessarily a horror game. It was sort of horror infused, I guess. But I was surprised that you were letting the party split up. And then I was really surprised by them being an audience for a couple minutes. And I was surprised by your rapid cuts. And I was really amazed at how well it came up. So my question is, did you see somebody else doing that? Or was that just like something that was intuitive to you? Because to me, that was like seemed really novel.
That's a good question. I don't know. I can't really think of what the origin of that technique was, honestly. I think it's just something that grew organically from me running these games over and over and over again, and then finding that like it was enjoyable for me. It was fun for me to do, and the players seemed to enjoy it. I would say like it is extra good for the scouting scenario. It is so good for the scouting scenario because, you know, again, okay, put on our adversary hat. We're the DM who is maybe enjoying the fact that the players are making mistakes and the scout is going forward and you know what's in the room and you know what danger the scout is going to get into, and they're pushing the envelope and they're doing too much and not doing their job and going back to report. Great. So you draw it out a little bit. You know, maybe add a little something for the party and the group in the back, right? You know, give them a little, I mean, okay, the easiest thing is like attack them, right? Have them do a combat or something. Something's going on in the back of the group that they're dealing with. Get attacked from behind, so that's going to maybe push them forward, or otherwise get some chance to interact with the scenario a little bit. But jumping back to the scout, the nice thing about the scout is, you know, the players who are not active in what's going on with the scout, if you can get the scout into trouble and then cut back to the main group, right? They've just gotten a little foreshadowing, right? They've just gotten a little taste of what is waiting down that hall from them. But as players, they're now in that position where they have to think, oh, but my character doesn't know that. Right now I'm forcing my players to do the split, to do the player versus character split and play a little bit with the like, oh man, oh, I guess my character doesn't know. I guess my character would in fact just run down the hallway because they don't know, right? And then we all like get a good chuckle over the nonsense that happens to them when they run down the hallway. So I really enjoy that.
Place where traditionally I have been loath to go in that direction. And usually at my tables, you know, maybe because people have played with you possibly, I have to like yell at my players, like, use all the information. Like you player, you Max, Lauren, everybody, use all the information you have available because this game is lethal. And I had a new player sit in my game like a week ago Friday, first round down, right? Just first round, zap, laser gun, your character is down, out, they're not coming back. Welcome to the game. I tend to be a little bit less liable to go in that same direction, Paul. And certainly my instinct all the time has been, unlike yours, has been when the party splits, I got to physically take that character, that player out of the room and deal with them when they're gone. And I never on my own would have come up with intentionally let the other players watch what's happening. Because my instinct was always I actually to physically remove to simulate the separation.
Yeah, I think it you got to know your players. Some players will dig into this, some will not, right? Like there's, if you're playing with the type of players who are going to delight in like metagaming to win, right? If you have players who are like, we're going to win oriented, this will not go as well, right? Good players, as Stan calls them. Annoying players. <is okay. laughs> If they are super focused on, I want to beat the dungeon, I want to win, right? They're not going to engage in that moment, right? Like that's, I really enjoy that when my players can engage in that moment of separating out the player versus character. This is probably very indicative of why I ended up writing Fearful Ends, right? The whole point of Fearful Ends is that we know that our characters are going to fail horrifically. They're going to die. They're going to have complete breakdowns. Terrible, terrible things are going to happen to them. And we as players are going to delight in watching that happen to them. And I guess even in my adventuresome D&D games, I like a little bit of that going on. I like a little bit of separation from player and character. So I don't know. Well, I feel like I'm rambling. My point is, know your players. This is going to work with some of them and not work with all of them.
Yeah. It works. Again, I've every time that I've seen you or now the rest of our, you know, friends who use that as a model, it works great. I've never seen it fail, frankly, as surprising as it was to me the first time I saw it. It is a legitimately really great technique that I wouldn't have thought of.
I will say that as we're talking about this, like it's dawning on me that like an important part of this technique is to bring some action to the other group, right? It works so much better when things are happening. If you've got one group is advancing down the passageway to explore the next room and the other group is just hunkering down and staying still, if no danger comes to the group that's hunkered down, there's nothing for them to do, right? There's not like when you cut back to them, they say, yep, we continue to wait. And you go, oh, okay. And then you go back to the first group. Whereas instead, you need something, right? Whether that's they get attacked or there's some weird sounds coming from this hallway or something has got to change, some action has got to happen to tempt them to deal with what's happening in their space.
So here's a question we had a couple minutes ago from our viewer, Vino Azul, who always has great questions, actually, and we don't manage to get him on screen enough all the time. So Vino's question was, if the party is split, does each part get a separate random encounter roll? So I think part of what you're talking about there, Paul, is, my instinct would be like, I've got the mechanics, I'm going to use the dice. Are you saying that you should more, by fiat, step in and just make something interesting happening?
Possibly. I mean, it depends on you know, we're getting into, like, depends on what the game is and what you're playing and whatnot. But yeah, okay, so let's say... I don't know. This is going to get us into our argument that we've had in the past about random random encounter rolls. I think in this case I might lean in the direction of being like, yeah, wandering monster is going to happen here. Definitely, let's push it. And whether that's fiat or me just saying like, chances are going up, I'm going to roll more dice. That could be the action, though. That could simply be the action. You know, if you're of the type where you're like, no, I want the dice to dictate whether or not encounters happen. You know, great. Talking with the thief player, you're sneaking down the passageway, you come around the corner, you peek around, you think you see some origin of some kind of light source up ahead. Meanwhile, back at the main group, please roll the random encounter die. Right? Yeah. Let's just give them a little something to stress out about.
That's not bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I like you saying that like have the players roll it is actually, again.
Yeah, I know that.
So when it, so as favorite. We've said before, the little trick there is when it comes up, it feels like it's their fault.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you're giving them a little bit of a clue into like why the don't split the party trope exists, right? Oh, we have to roll random encounter and our whole party isn't here. That's not great.
Yeah. I think it's important to make that explicit. You know, and again, not all game runners use random encounters. So if it's on the table, you got to say it out loud that that's at stake. That's part of your time resource. Yeah, that's fair. I like it.
Yeah. So again, and I think, like I think I said earlier, this works great in horror. Okay, you talked about seeing this in one of my early horror games. I think it works fantastic in horror. The nice thing about horror, and especially something like Fearful Ends, where players are starting to intentionally let go of control of their character a little bit, right? Because of the mechanics of mental stress, as your character uncovers more and more mental stress, it starts to give you these prompts of things you should do that are probably not in your character's best interest, right? You're getting angry, you're getting a little paranoid, you're maybe starting to hallucinate some stuff, whatever. It's encouraging you to invent stuff that is detrimental to your character. So I think that innately brings us to tension points where the party does want to split, where it's going to happen, right? Some new horrible thing encounters, a bunch of mental stress cards come up. Half the party is like, I'm done. I'm running. Why would I stay here? I'm out. And the other half of the party is saying something like, I'm gone catatonic, or I'm really pissed and I'm going to bash down the door and find out who did this horrible thing, right? You know, the party is, they're leaning into the stress cards and they're letting that pull their characters, and it just inevitably will pull the characters into different directions. And I think it's great, right? Because now you do have action on multiple fronts. You can get that nice fast cutting where you've got interesting things happening on both sides of the fence. And extra good if some part of the group has gone a direction where the rest of the group's going to go anyway. Again, this is, it's almost like what you were talking about before about giving information to the players. This is a way to give information to the players sideways, right? I'm a very sideways informing the players what's coming up for them to react to.
Yep, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
Now, the funny thing is, so speaking of horror games, which I rarely, and it's they're not my number one thing, so I rarely participate in them. I'd seen you do this technique a number of times, and I'd gotten to the point where I was like, just don't split the party. Like D&D, my games, just don't even let them. Don't allow them to split the party, even if they want to. Just say, we're not going to let that happen. Mm-hmm. And then if it happens, I'd seen your technique of quick splitting with the group still there. And so in the back of my head, I was like, well, if I ever have to do that, that's what I'll do. Now, like a year or two ago at our house con, I'm running a session that's based on Joe Hill's Plunge comic book, which is a Lovecraftian naval math horror story. Right. So it's like everything, right. It's like basically Joe just wrote it for me. Right. And so I've got, and I'm running it with the Fearful Hens rules, which for the first time for me, and it runs great. And there is a moment where there's someone spelunks down into a math cave alone. And I'm not trying to arrange it. That happens in the story originally, and then it just kind of organically happens at the game table. And again, I mean, whoever this was, they squirrel their way alone down the horrible math cave, and to my surprise,
what is a math cave?
You got to read the book, Paul. You got to read the book, Paul. No, I'm not giving any spoilers here.
Okay. So alone in a math cave, whatever that means.
It's not good. I'll say that. It's not a good place. So to my surprise, I'm like, the only way at the game table, the only way I can deal with it is I have to take the player in the other room, which is the thing that I was swore to myself I was never going to do again. And so I do that, and I pull one of the players away from the table. You know, I'm like, well, this is terrible hygiene. I'm leaving the whole, you know, group of players minus one at the table with nothing to do while I do this. But I very briefly, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes possibly, pull a player into a nearby room with the two of us, explain what they see there, which is puzzling and terrible. And one of the things that happens is that in world, there's something that you're not allowed to talk about. You see something that actually prevents you from talking about the thing. And I think partly the player themselves sort of didn't entirely believe what they were seeing. So I told them what they see. The player themselves was skeptical about what they were seeing. And then we come back to the table, and the player isn't sure what they saw and isn't actually allowed to talk about what they saw. And that was actually that was unsettling, and it was confusing. And the other players were like, are they lying to us? Do they have a plot against us? What's going on? And that actually, somewhat to my surprise, put this very nice seed of distrust, which is what you want there.
Yeah.
And that was, I swore I was never going to do that again. And then in that particular case, in a horror game, which I don't normally run, it actually worked really great. So it is a tool that in some cases can still work.
The question I have for you is, why did you feel like you needed to bring them away from the table? Is it because of the nature of this thing not being allowed to be spoken of?
Partly, yes. That's what clinched it.
Okay.
That's what really clinched it.
That's interesting. Because the thing I would want to challenge there, and there's, you probably have lots of good reasons to say no to my challenge, but the thing I would want to challenge there is, could you have done it at the table? Why bring them away at all? Because here's my claim, right? And again, especially with my brain in horror land, right? So you're running some kind of horror game, and you're in the early stages of it. I think one of the things that is really delightful for me is if you're in that point where, like, you as DM know that there's something truly terrible, maybe a cosmic horror or a monster or something out there that is unbelievable in the real world, right? If the party splits up, it's a great opportunity for one or a subset of the party to witness the terrible thing and then have to come back to the main group and report, we saw this unbelievable thing. And I've found it is actually quite delightful. I've had cases of this, right? I've been in a horror game where half the party is like, you know, it's raining, they're outside, they're like, half the party is in the van, they're trying to get the van to start, right? The motor isn't quite getting up. They know something terrible is out there. They've heard noises. They don't know. They want to get the hell out of here. The other half of the party is searching around or whatever and encounters the horrible monster, the unbelievable thing that definitely cannot exist in the world. They come racing back to the right. So I'm describing that encounter, right? Everybody at the table is hearing me talk about the, you know, 6 foot fish person who's immune to bullets or whatever the heck it is that is that they're facing. And they're all freaking out and they're drawing mental stress cards and they're having a wonderful time. They race back. They jump in the van. Go, 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 go. Finally, the van goes and it takes off. Now we have a moment where the players get to play a scene where the people who saw the horrible fish man have to describe the horrible fish man to the players who didn't see the horrible fish man. We all know that the horrible fish man exists, right? At a meta level, everyone knows. And I think because we all have that context, it is even more fun to now roleplay. Oh, no, I'm going to roleplay. No, I'm going to roleplay the skeptic here. Nah, that can't exist. Nah, you're just losing your... I'm sure it was just a shadow. I'm sure it was just a, you know... I think that's fun, and people can lean into it even more when they have the context of having gotten to be the audience member previously, right? They were the audience who saw the thing from a distance, and now they're role-playing a character who can be, you know, plausibly deniable about the existence of the thing that we all know does, in fact, exist.
I hear that, I don't know, I'm talking myself in circles. I've seen it, right? I've experienced that work super well in your games. And initially I was surprised, but 100% it works super well. Everybody has a really good time with it. My instinct is to have, I like having the players be a little bit closer to the characters. And in this and other circumstances, I liked the players actually experiencing the same uncertainty that the characters would. And maybe a little bit like a jump scare in a horror movie. Like, okay, we know it's a horror movie and we know nobody in the theater is actually going to get injured. And yet we're engineering a moment where people actually are going to have a physical reaction that we've arranged that actually going to get them, the viewer, to physically, you know, jump a little bit out of their seat. And so I kind of like the players actually experiencing the uncertainty. And certainly in this case, I'm going to say that it worked very well this time. So this particular time, I think the amount of actual doubt at the table with the players, including the player that I actually told about it, and they didn't entirely believe it either. Like multiple levels of, I can't talk about this and we're not sure where the uncertainty is. This particular case that worked very well to be a little bit closer to the doubt.
Yep. And I don't want to say that either technique is right. I think that they are both good tools to have in the toolbox, and you got to know your group and you know your situation and use the appropriate one. Yeah, I think we all have that moment of hesitation of like, oh, I got to take someone aside. And I've done that. I've done it just at the last con I was at. It was like, all right, you know what? Everyone take five. I'm going to take this player off to the side for a second. We're just going to do a real quick thing together. I don't mind it because, frankly, I do feel like it also builds a little tension with the rest of the group. Oh, geez, what is happening? Right? What's going on? We don't know. There's fear of the unknown is now at play. Great. I think that's great. We've also seen it play out really well when you and I were co-DMing. That's another... Like, one of the beauties of co-DMing is that you can do this without leaving the table, right? I'm going to send one of the other DMs and the other player out the room. And we saw this at that game we ran. I can't remember what terrible thing. Or what they saw. It was the Harvest King in the...
So, right.
Spoilers here, everyone, for a thing that's already been spoiled on this channel.
RWDM04. Yep.
Yeah.
Pumpkin King Adventure.
Yeah. Yep. So we basically had an invisible player sneak into a room and watch the Pumpkin King get killed and prepared to be eaten. right? And then he makes it back to the main group, and then out come the servants, I think, with the platter of food. Oh, look, we go, or the stew pot or whatever it is they came out with. Like, here we go. Yeah. And that one player knows the terrible things. And the best part is you as DM didn't know that the player knew the terrible things. Right.
Right.
So yes. He's got to role play this whole ridiculous. No, don't eat the food. Don't do it. It's the god, the Pumpkin King. They killed the Pumpkin King. He's in there. Right. And that's just, it's a great moment. It's a great moment.
It was. Not everybody's going to have two DMs like that, but that was that we could leverage it to both sides being active at the same time. And the players actually not knowing what the other one knew, and even the DMs not knowing what the other one knew when they came back together. So it was very surprising for everybody involved. Yeah. That was a blast. So
I think that can work very well. Taking the player aside is a good technique. Playing it out in front of the whole party and making the other players into the audience is a good technique. They're just got to know when the right one for the right situation is. It's all good stuff.
I will say that moment there, among my notes of like how to be a better DM, in the rarely used section of like be a good co-DM, right? We'd started off with like, technically you're the referee and I'm the adversary like normal. And so all of a sudden you look at me like, you're the DM now. Leave the room. And I was like, really should have listened to the voices of the NPCs better. It's like all of a sudden I had to step into all the NPCs in this courtroom scene. And once again, and this happens with improv stuff too, is I always come away and make a note to like, listen better. Listen better when you take over any or all of the NPCs. So that was one of the main lessons from that moment. It's like now
that
I know
was
that
definitely
that,
a we surprise.
Never done that before. We never talked about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a surprise moment. I can't remember. I'm trying to remember now how much we discussed doing the adversary versus the DM role versus splitting things. I think we were trying to get into that as much as possible, right? We were trying to let you be the adversary wherever we could. And I feel like that one just kind of like just the situation was just so delightfully organic of like, this is what has to happen. I have to go do this. I have to take this guy aside. I've got another DM sitting right next to me, Dan, you're up. And I think that's just something we'll be prepared for in the future. If and when we ever co-DM another game of like, yep, could pass the reins at a moment's notice. Get ready for it.
It's one of those great, for me, it was one of those great yes and moments from the improv advice of step into the fear of like, oh, like really me being like, frankly, really scared of the situation. Be like, yes,
yes,
I'm doing that.
Oh, goodness. So I feel like we've talked a lot here about sort of some interesting techniques as DM to handle don't split the party, right? Or when the party splits, right? Talked about some of that stuff. And then, you know, we talked a little bit about some of the situations that require split. I think we spent a lot of time on like the scouting thing, but I've seen other things like silly stuff, right? Like just the nature of the combat splits the party, or maybe somebody gets taken, somebody's abducted or put in jail. Like I've had that situation. Like, okay, one of the players is in jail and you guys are trying to orchestrate the escape. So we've got two groups going here. Dan, from the player's perspective though, do you still think like as a player that your gut is always going to be, don't let the party ever split? Is there any reason that you think makes sense for the players to be like, you know what guys, we should split up?
Well, I try to it becomes enough of a problem that I definitely push them in the direction of not of staying together. I will say, I guess in my now about year long Star Frontiers campaign, I'm getting, you know, through natural play, I'm getting a little bit looser about stuff that I thought I was really dogmatic about, and you know, things happen in the play that you just kind of can't avoid. And I wind up kind of bending a lot of rules that I would have said I was really hardcore about. And one of the things on there's also the issue of splitting the party on a longer scale. And it feeds into maybe some players aren't there. and the parties wandered now to a different location. On a really high level, there's kind of an interesting dilemma in the first edition DM's guide. And we don't need to, I had it prepared. We don't need to look at it, but in the section that we all love, we all adore on time in the campaign, on the page that says famously, you cannot have a meaningful campaign if strict time records are not spent, not kept. Yeah. Thanks for pulling up.
Yep.
So,
yep, yep.
And what that's talking about specifically, what that all caps yelly, you must keep time records, is specifically about splitting the party, actually. And so Gygax, when he's writing this, I snipped up like a whole page here, goes into this rather elaborate example that basically boils down to some of your players decide to stay in town and work on a dungeon, and other players, you have a session with them, and they go off into a long wilderness adventure. And the dungeon adventure, you know, in game only takes a day or two, and the wilderness adventure has taken a month. And now you've split the party in time. And how do you handle the issue of one party is technically working in January and the other party is technically in April at this point? What do you do about that? And at least in the first edition, Gygax doesn't let them play together. Doesn't let them play together until the time tracks have synced up again. And kind of near the end of that section, what I got highlighted there is, of course, this might mean that the players involved outdoors will either have to come home and just sit around and basically waste time, more or less. Otherwise, they will perforce be excluded from the game sessions which are taking place. They will not be allowed into the game sessions, is what he says there. And, you know, you're shaking your head, Paul. And then he's got a paragraph defending. He's like, if this is so complicated and causes these things, you may think this is not worthwhile. And Gygax goes into kind of a heavy duty defense of, it gives texture to the campaign. It's more realistic. It provides interesting choices and consequences. And it's another way that we can filter the really good players from the poor players. And that's ultimately always our goal when we're playing D&D, is to determine who's a good strategic player. Now, interestingly, when you go to the second edition DMG that was updated by Dave Cook, right, there's a section on time and there's an example of play. And basically there's a point where one player says, I want to go on a wilderness adventure and get more experience. And the DM says no. And it says the DM doesn't want to let them split the party. And so it's a very interesting total reversal from first edition to second edition on that specific issue of time in the campaign, where do you or do you not let the party get split in time? And Cook's revision there is just don't let it happen, because it's such a pain in the butt.
I feel like Gygax can only make these arguments because of the setup that we imagine that he had. Now, maybe we were wrong, and maybe we're, you know, maybe this isn't based in fact, maybe this is apocryphal, but my understanding is that he had a huge number of players, right? Maybe 50 players, according to OD&D, right? And that he was just running games all the time, and whoever showed up is who showed up, right? And so he had a huge pool of players, and as DM, he knew every Wednesday night, probably every weeknight, that he was running. He's like, I'm gonna run D&D. We're gonna play some D&D, and maybe it's very easy for him to say, like, oh, sorry, Bob, your character's off in the wilderness. You can't play tonight. Sorry, no, stay home, right?
You'll have to come tomorrow night.
Right. Come tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night's the night that I'm doing that. Modern players are
more used to, like, well, my six friends are coming over every other, you know, Friday night. This is when we're available. I'm not about to exclude my buddy from actually playing in the game for maybe a month because we got to catch the timeline up. And more likely what's going to happen is, I think, because I feel like I've been in this situation, and then the answer is just, well, we just force the decision. We just say, like, look, you guys were out in the wilderness. You get back. It's months later. The group that was in town, we're just going to say a month passes. Sorry, guys. A month passed. you can, I'll real quick let you tell me what you did in that month, but it's got to be nothing, you know, that's going to require a lot of adjudication and fine-tuned play, like just broad strokes, real quick. What did you do in that month? Okay, great, done. Now we're back. Now our timeline is synced and we can move forward.
I that's totally my same interpretation about where that comes from when Gygax writes that, is that he had sufficient flexibility. In some sense, there was a point where he had all the players. Like all the players of AD&D are playing at his house night after night.
Are playing at, right? Gary's
technically
house.
It's all of them just for a brief moment in time. So that's the only way that I can really make sense of that as well. That's in some sense, that's all you're doing, is you're just running D&D sessions and nothing else with your time. And for me, you know, nowadays, like if a player's out, in my campaign, and I do have people going on long month long wilderness adventures, they stay with them, right? They stay with the rest of the party. You've had things in your Warhammer game whereby we assume that you have disease that week. For me, I assume that they have heat stroke for that session, and you know, physically still stuck together but not active, possibly in peril. I had in my last session, I had the new player lose their first PC, and then I hand them the PC of someone that's out, and that actually gets even more stressful. Because now they've got somebody else's character in their hands, and yes, I shoot them and they go down. So they're still at risk potentially, but at least I am keeping them together, because that seems like a better issue to deal with than having them split up in time like that. Definitely. There was a point where someone said, "Let's leave someone at the outpost to defend it," and actually I disallowed that. I said, you've got to stay together so we don't get into this situation. I have recently disallowed that exact thing.
Yeah, I get that. We're out of time, Dan. Any final thoughts on splitting the party?
Well, I think it's interesting that I've gone back and forth about whether to permit it or not. Sometimes a little bit yes, and sometimes a little bit no. Small scale. You, Paul, have convinced me that in small doses, that it can actually be a really interesting technique to say yes to those situations. And then you've got, you know, that it is an interesting kind of advanced DM challenge to manage it. And we have techniques like actually remove them to another room for a brief amount of time, if you can do that, or your idea of actually keep quick cuts and have everybody viewing the other side has worked marvelously. So I've gotten a little bit softer over time about, you can let the party split up in some circumstances, managed wisely, and actually it can be a really nice addition to your game.
Yeah, I'm in favor of it happening. I can't imagine playing a game where I'm just outright forbidding it and saying, no, you can't split up. Just no, I'll figure out a way to make it work. I think I've talked a lot about my perspective on DMing a party split, and I for some reason my brain is now just constantly ticking over, but what about when I'm a player? What should my stance as a player be? Should it be always keep the party together? And I'm trying to come up with some reason that it's advantageous for the players to split, and I'm sure it'll always be contextual, but in the back of my head now is this thought of, is there a situation, especially like a social situation, not a combat tactical situation, but a social situation where it would be interesting to split up the party and pretend like we don't actually know each other in some way to manipulate the NPCs. Never seen that tactic get used at a table. And now I want to find a way to use it.
Clever. Nice.
Okay.
Now
viewers,
I want to see that.
If you have thoughts on whether or not you should split the party, how to handle it as DM, or whether it is advisable as a player or not, please leave us some comments in the YouTube video here. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe you will have a take that we hadn't thought of here today, and maybe that'll spin up a new topic for us down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We are on YouTube and Twitch and Facebook and GitHub and places like that. We have the handle Wandering DMs on all those sites, so please look for us there and cleave into that like button.
If you prefer to listen to our show in audio-only podcast format, you can do so. Those podcasts are available at our website at wanderingdms.com. Also, through various third-party podcast carriers like iTunes and Spotify and Stitcher and Pocket Cast. If you're listening to this show right now on one of those sites and it offers the ability to do so, please rate and review our show. That helps other users of that site find us, and we really appreciate it.
We really do. And as usual, a huge thanks to our patrons who support the show all the time here. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. And just like Paul said at the top of the hour, every single one of our tiers gets you access to our private Discord server where the conversation continues 24/7 and gets you access to the live video after chat that we'll be having in about 10 minutes to continue the conversation and get your further thoughts about possibly splitting the party or possibly forbidding that, because we would like to hear that. And that's part of our favorite thing every week. And like we say, we'll be there about 10 minutes after the hour. So if you're new, we would love to see you there. We always love to have new people joining in on the live after chat. Once again, Paul, Happy New Year. I'm really looking forward to the seventh season of Wandering DMs that we just started.
Me too. Holy cow. Who would have thought that we would go seven seasons into this show? It's fantastic.
Right? Right? Really looking forward to this year here. So don't forget, we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.